Hello and good evening and welcome to The Client to State. This is the radio show where we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the matrix. The Client to State is brought to you free of charge by the group that conforms the Client to State. Tonight we are going to have the second part of our radio show about drugs, and we're going to discuss a few juicy details for the people who like to talk about these issues in a way that doesn't actually involve the state. The Client to State is welcoming you, and now we have Dash with us to talk about these issues. Dash, go ahead.
Dash is muted. This is Quash.
Oops. Well, Quash sounds almost like Dash.
Oh, okay.
So, Quash, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for being here, and it's pretty good that we are around. Unfortunately, we are missing most of our cast today. Eternal is busy with work, and our good man, Ronald McPaul, who always does the intros, is undergoing surgery right now. Actually, a rather complex surgery that we're always happy to see him around today. We don't have the luxury of being with him here. I hope he pulls through, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah, it sounded like it from the thread he posted. They were removing like half of the internals inside his face. It just sounded like, you know, tonsillectomy and a whole bunch of other things that I couldn't pronounce. So didn't sound like fun at all.
Do you think he's going to look better after the surgery?
Well, I don't know what he looked like before, so it's hard for me to tell. I just hope his voice is good.
Well, you know, you never
what
know.
What would we do without the soothing? What would we do without the soothing? The sonorous tones of our announcer.
I have no idea. Well, we have him pre-recorded, so, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, then it doesn't matter.
All right. So tonight's topic is illegal drugs. We covered legal drugs in the show last week, and today we're going to cover illegal drugs, including hard drugs today. And we're going to cover their effects, and we're also going to cover their impact in society, which is important for us.
I've been looking forward to it. I missed last week's show. Actually, I didn't even know there was a show last week, and I went ahead and made other plans. And at the last minute, Eternal contacted me, and I'm like, no, sorry. But so I missed it, and the archive's not up yet, so I couldn't hear what was said last week.
Well, the archives will be up shortly. The problem that I've been having with editing the shows is that I can hardly find a little bit of time to actually do the edits. And they are kind of time consuming. I'm looking for a better process. Of course, our listeners are always free to suggest solutions or ideas. I'd love to have a more reliable process to solve the problem of actually editing the show and making sure that each show has a good audio quality and is available on time. Mostly that's my concern these days.
You know, and if we were statists, we'd be looking to the FCC to provide these solutions for us. You know, they ought to be making standardized broadcast processes so people can have a uniform listening experience.
And you can't scam people with Ponzi schemes while you're doing the radio show editing.
Yeah. Pay us now and you'll get, you know, and your kids will be able to have wonderful radio to listen to as well.
By the way, the SEC is now investigating a Bitcoin fraud these days. Apparently, there's a bunch of people who have been very, 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 very angry these days because this guy called Pirate has scammed them out of millions of dollars, if my understanding is correctly, using a Pirate pass-through fund, actually a set of Pirate pass-through funds that involve activity that appears to be a Ponzi scheme, and
well,
everyone fell for that.
How can you say fell for it? I mean, you know, anybody that would promise a 1.6% return per week or something crazy like that? It was a ridiculous, you know, percentage return without really explaining, you know, what the investment really was and having a name of Pirate 40. Who could come back later and say, I didn't know he got my money. I didn't know I was expecting it all legitimate. So I need help now, you know. It seems crazy to me.
It is crazy. And these crazy people who were scammed by this con artists are now complaining to the SEC, but the SEC can't find pirate to the extent that I am informed. So what they have done is they have threatened the operator of the exchange market to get the ID, you know, the identities, the IDs of everyone who was involved in every single investment operation there, fraudulent or not.
What exchange was he going through? Was it the Bitcoin
I think they're called GLBSE.
Oh, they're gone. They shut down.
They are of course they shut down because after they contacted the operator, the main operator of this thing,
yep.
Nefario. I mean, who would give money to a guy called Nefario?
Yeah.
But people did, right?
Well, he seemed like a good guy, actually. I mean, he was the one who was stopped coming in on the border on the West Coast. You know, I don't know if he's an Australian resident or UK. He was in UK when they troubled him over this most recent thing. But he was coming in on through immigrations on the West Coast, and they stopped him and said, "Well, you only have so many dollars with you. You know, when you come into this country, you have to have enough cash to pay for a return airplane flight." I think he was coming here for a conference or something, and he said, "Well, I have money. I have Bitcoin." They're like, "What are Bitcoins?" You know, so he had to go through for the whole explanation, and finally they let him in, I think after like scanning his computer and stuff to make sure he wasn't a dangerous terrorist.
Actually, they didn't let him in. They haven't.
Oh, they didn't really.
They just
okay.
Put him on a return plane and said, you know, fuck you. You can't be in here.
Oh,
fuck you.
Oh my gosh, I thought he eventually got in after some delay. That's awful. You know, it's awful. But you know, I read the whole account. I read his account of what had happened, and something I read had, you know, his prior involvement in Bitcoin, and he seemed like a serious kind of guy. You know, and here I find out on this latest endeavor, he paid for his own servers and kept them in his apartment. You know, he paid for them on his own credit cards. It was not hard for them to track it down, and here they confiscated his entire stock market, you know. So it just seemed like a kind of a rinky-dink operation, unfortunately. You know, there were other people involved in this too. You know, there's a regular Redditor that I've interacted with online was part of the board, and
Chris,
you
know, Rico.
I wasn't going to name him, but yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're all going to be under investigation. Yeah, they're all going to be under investigation now. You know,
of course.
So it's all very sad. You'd have thought they would have taken some steps to protect themselves and protect it better. You know, but they said some very brash things like, "Well, if they come after us, we'll just move the data overseas. You know, we can move it in an instant, and all they have to do is knock on his door and come and confiscate the servers." You know.
Well, they said they could move it in an instant. It was hot air. What turned out to happen is they didn't move it in an instant. After a couple of weeks, I think it was a British service that confiscated his stuff. I'm not sure what the name of the service is, but now it's all confiscated, and he started demanding, contrary to his contract with the people who were participating there, demanding identity if people wanted their funds back. So essentially, it's just a heist. But, you know, it can only happen when government involved. You know, when government involvement is at play, that's the kind of thing that happens, right?
Well, and that was probably the deal they gave him. They probably said, well, you know, if you'll unlock this and and give us access to the list of people involved, then we won't prosecute you. So they probably said, well, you know, if you want this to be legal, you've got to conform with U.S. and international banking laws, which require, you know, giving identification. So they probably gave it as an out to him, like, well, you want these people to get their money back, don't you? So all they have to do is be compliant and give us their IDs, and they'll get their money back. Of course, that'll go into some database so that they can, you know, audit these people and find out what they've been doing online.
Absolutely. You know, it's the whole, what I said on the forums when I found out about this disaster is everybody is accusing Nefario of acting like a sociopath, right?
Right.
What is the explanation for a regular guy who has done nothing wrong with anyone, right? Or against anyone, right?
Yeah.
to become a sociopath or to start acting sociopathically, right? To go back on his promises and to be completely cryptic and secretive. The only explanation for this is that he was threatened with punishment by third parties that wanted to know what was up, right? It's the explanation, right?
Yeah, there were... I don't know how much money was in this this stock market, you know, but I imagine probably several million dollars worth of in U.S. funds, and they probably said, "Well, you've got like 600 or 700 customers." I'm not sure of that number either, you know. But if each one of this, every one of these accounts is really money laundering, then we can charge you. You know, you'll go away for 120 years. You know. And you have no defense. You're on your own. These are your servers. You're doing the money laundering. And they probably said, do you want to go away for 120 years in probably a U.S. prison? You know, no. So he's going to do what he can to get out of it. You know, and you're right. The blame is on the state, not him. He's being coerced at this point. He has no choice.
Unfortunately for him, he's going to have to contend with that, and the people who were operating pass-throughs and the people who were benefiting from these pass-throughs, if they didn't get their funds out in time, they have all but lost that money. Just, there's no other way to say that, but just all, you know, they have been robbed by the people who are threatening Nefario. And Nefario has not said who these people are, right?
Well,
one more time, the state gets away with stealing from other people and just disrupting their business, right?
Right. So, you know, you have to ask, how could he have prevented this? Well, one, obviously, the server, he could have been running the thing on Tor. He could have done something to protect anonymity, make it harder for them to find him. But I also wonder if he should have had some kind of better rules for his stock market so that people couldn't so easily get scammed and then go complaining to the state saying, oh, help me get my money back.
Yeah, so, you're right.
You know, but on the other hand, if it's going to be a free market, let the buyer beware, you know? So there's an argument for saying, well, I'm going to open it up, but, you know, people have to know what the risks are too.
I agree with you. Look, the people who invested in this pirate funds scheme, we don't know exactly what the scheme was about. We can suspect it was a Ponzi scheme. The people who invested in this thing, they're fools, right?
Well, they are.
Yeah, they are, right? We can't say anything else about them other than now that they're bitching to the state to solve their problem because they're too stupid to identify a fraudulent investment operation. They're just fools.
W.C. Fields is one of my favorite actors. And he had this phrase he always said. It was that you cannot cheat an honest man. And what he meant was that, you know, the person who's most easily cheated is the one who's looking to cheat others himself. It's the dishonest person who's looking to make a fast buck is the one that you can exploit, because an honest man isn't going to go into a Ponzi scheme. An honest man isn't going to be trying to steal money out of and get it from others out of greed. Every one of these investors, I bet you, knew, 95% of them knew this was a scam and figured, gosh, if I can just get in early enough, then I'll be collecting money from the later on investors. You know, the greater fool theory that if I put my money in, you know, then these people down the road are going to get burned after I get my money out. You know, so it was everybody's, you know, planning to steal, to cheat other people beyond them, and it failed, and now they're the crybabies.
I agree with you.
Well, you know, and this connects us back with our main issue we wanted to talk today was about, you know, drugs. And again, we've got issues of crybabies where people, you know, protect us from ourselves. Don't let us take drugs and ruin our lives. We need somebody to protect us. You know, this is the same kid they're doing, keep me from throwing my money away, you know. Crying, you know, I need a nanny, I need somebody to watch over me, or I'll do things, bad things to hurt myself and my family.
Which is very unfortunate, because people actually do believe that. I wish it wasn't that way, but it's true.
Well, where do you think it came from? Where do we get, how many generations does it go back that we were trained or became to think that that, you know, we need somebody to protect us from ourselves. You know, was it really that way in this country back around the time of the Revolution? You know, when I read stories about, you know, early settlers, especially those who went into the Western lands, occupying Indian lands, but they were very individualist. You look at the rebellion, Shays' Rebellion, and other, and the situation in Pennsylvania at a time that Rothbard wrote about, which was, it was pretty close to anarchy, and they didn't want government. They wanted to be left alone. But somehow we've all of us in this country pretty much have come back to the point of, you know, learning dependency on the government, wanting to perpetuate it, and wanting to be bailed out, or we took steps of doing things on our own, you know, like investing in a currency outside of the U.S. dollar. So where do you think that comes from?
I can tell you this. I am not sure if I can tell you where it comes from, but I can tell you how it's perpetrated. And it's always incrementalism, right? I was reading a few papers, actually a collection of papers that was published a few weeks ago on how the Jews were expropriated. And then they were annihilated in Germany, in World War II Germany. And it turns out that it took about 15 years from start, from the first measure against the Jews, to extermination. And what happened there is that legally, this is all legal, of course, this every single step that was taken against Jews was legal. And that's the terrifying thing, or it should be a terrifying thing for everyone who believes in law. Legally, they expropriated every single thing that Jews had, even foreign bank accounts. That's how widespread theft was. But at the beginning, it was just, you know, well, you have to pay higher taxes for this, and then you have to pay an extra tax for this other thing, and then you are not allowed to participate in this kind of business, and then if you have a foreign banks, you know, foreign banks account, bank accounts, you have to pay us another tax, and then, you know, if you want to exit the country, you have to give us a tax. And then the tax turns into, you know, you have to give us everything you have, and you're not allowed to possess jewelry and stuff like that. So it was gradually being confiscated from people who were living in Germany, and people who didn't exit it on time, they were dirt poor, and then they were just murdered, right? They were made into soap, and their teeth were taken to, you know, make gold bars, I guess. It was pretty fucking horrible. But the key thing is incrementalism, right? It doesn't come from somewhere where somebody, you know, thinks about, I'm going to do this stuff. It comes simply from the fact that people are quick to adapt to new rules that they perceive to be legitimate. And, well, you know?
Yeah, there. I think there was a long-standing, you know, prejudice against the Jews in Europe. And that was a part of it, you know, but it, as you say, it gradually grew into, you know, a legal prejudice. And they excused it, I'm sure, by saying, well, it's the law. We all have to follow the law. You know, look at the people who line up, you know, for the rape at the gate, going through the airports, you know, and we have to follow the law. And that you see the ones who are videotaping and questioning it. You can see on the videotape the people who are like frowning and looking down on them as, oh, those rabble rousers, those troublemakers, they don't want to follow the law. We need to fix those people, or they're going to cause more problems.
Well, fixing those people always involves threats of violence against them, doesn't it?
Right, exactly. And they don't mind because, well, it's legal.
And it's pretty terrible because you see this prejudice today. For example, ex-cons, can they find a job? It's pretty unlikely that they will be able to, because everywhere you go, you are actually subject to a background criminal check. Whenever you actually apply for a job, this happens to you. And so an ex-con, somebody who, not to use the status terminology, broke the law, but somebody who decided to disobey some magical papers somewhere, right, is now unable to find a job. And what is he going to do after that? He's going to either leave the country, unlikely because many countries just don't take you if you have a criminal background, or turn to crime again. We have instituted a slave class of people, literally slaves. When they're in prison, they have to do prison labor, which is like You get paid 85 cents an hour or 8 cents, something like that. It's ridiculous, right? Slave labor that companies profit from. And this is all enshrined into law, right? This is the legalization of blatant chattel slavery that we're living today, beyond tax slavery. It's chattel slavery. We're living in that thing today, and we have millions of people in that situation. What are we going to do about that? That's just appalling and terrible.
It is. They can't get apartments. They can't get jobs. I guess all they can get is welfare, and you know the politicians are threatening to cut that off unless they get drug tested. I saw a terrible article I was looking earlier online. Norwalk, I think Ohio. I hate how a lot of online newspapers, they just put the city and you don't know what state it's in or where, you know, where is Norwalk? I have to dig around. I'm pretty sure this is Ohio.
Norwalk? It's right next to Springfield, man.
I don't know. I don't, okay. There's probably more than one Norwalk, but I'm from the other stuff on here, it looks like Ohio. And it said this woman who lived in Willard was convicted of a drug offense Monday. The article is dated the 4th and sentenced to the maximum time in prison. This pretty, this attractive girl, they have a picture of her. And this is in the Norwalk Reflector newspaper. Katie Hall, 21, pleaded guilty possession of heroin in connection with the February 21st traffic stop in Wakeman. As part of a plea deal, said the state would not prosecute her on failure to appear for not coming to the county courthouse for a mid-September pretrial hearing. So she probably never got the notice, you know, one of those situations. And yeah. So as part of the plea deal, they're going to drop that while giving her the maximum penalty for what was, quote, a small amount of heroin on a plate found during a search of the vehicle. So 21 years old, she's got 12 months she's got to spend behind bars. And of course, that's a felony. And what will she be able to do when she gets out? You know, it's just, it's outrageous. Unfortunately,
not even McDonald's that she's going to be able to work for. Not right. Even McDonald's.
Right. And you know, unfortunately, she was on probation at the time. There was an earlier charge. She was wanted on a warrant for another traffic stop, possession of heroin paraphernalia. In January 2011, she was sentenced to 9 months in prison for selling heroin to a, quote, confidential informant. So she sold heroin to somebody, you know, and he turned her in. Probably he was trying to escape prison time. You know how they turn these criminals into informants. Maybe that's a job she could do. She can get a job for the FBI as an informant now and con other people into committing crimes so that they can get trumped up charges and be thrown in jail too. It's another Ponzi scheme. The country is going to be full of federal criminals, felons who won't be able to get jobs and do anything anymore. we'll all be criminals that can't leave the country, can't have guns to defend ourselves. And what will we do? I guess, I don't know. I don't know what we'll do.
I'm pretty sure I know what we will do. Do you want me to tell you?
I'll work for the Chinese.
Oh, God, you read my mind. Oh, man, it's just so sad. Well, let's tell our audience what heroin feels like and what the effects are in general. Do you have them up?
Do I have them up?
I can tell you a few details.
Oh, go ahead. I've never tried it, so you'll have to fill me in here.
So I don't know how heroin feels like. Otherwise, I would just go like... But I can tell you right away, there's a difference between heroin and morphine, but there's actually many, many similarities. For people who are familiar with, you know, they have had surgery or they have, you know, used the so-called illegal market to obtain morphine, it's a very, very potent sedative that soothes pain. It helps you a lot with pain, but it has a component of addiction. It will make you psychologically and physically an addict. And at the same time, the more you will consume the drug, the more you feel like you need to increase your dosage. This is actually a big problem because, as you probably know, morphine is the first line of treatment for patients who are in terminal stages of cancer, which, you know, is really painful, who cannot relieve their pain other than by resorting to morphine. Morphine has a set of side effects that are pretty bad. You know, the first thing that you notice is that you can't eat that much because you spend the most of your time in a daze. And at the same time, it produces intestinal complications. That is to say, you go to the restroom and then you can't really go. So that has been a significant problem with opioids in general, morphine in particular. So what heroin is a more potent version or analog of the same drug. The difference being it crosses your blood-brain barrier more easily. That is to say, a smaller dose is much more effective than a dose of morphine would be, you know, for the same amount of drugs you're consuming. Heroin is, but you know, as any other morphine, is very, very addictive. And being very, very addictive is one of the drugs that you have to watch out if you are a person who has addictive tendencies. Now, heroin used to be very popular, very, very popular in World War II Germany. It was a drug that was frequently used. It was produced by Bayer. And as the whole drug prohibition campaign started, it was one of the first drugs to get targeted in the late 50s and 60s. So how about that?
I didn't know that about Germany. I didn't know there was a history there. The only thing I knew about heroin was, you know, its traces back to China and the Opium Wars. And, you know, firsthand, my only experience is the brother of a friend of mine, an ex-con who got out, and my friend's family took the guy in, and he seemed to be getting cleaned up. He got a job, and he seemed to become an established member of the community, we'll say. And then you started seeing some signs that things weren't quite right again. He drifted back into it, and loaded up one day in the living room of my friend's house, and the wife and daughter came home and found him dead in the chair. You know, my take is that he decided he had enough, you know, and life just wasn't good or exciting enough, and he became one of the statistics. But he's the only one I've known whoever, as far as I know, that ever took heroin.
Heroin is really easy to overdose on because the LD, you know, the LD50 for the drug is pretty low, right? And at the same time, the difference between the dose that will give you an effect and the difference between the dose that will kill you, well, 50%, the LD50, is actually pretty high, except when you have already, you know, formed a habit. If you have formed a habit, if your body has developed the receptors in the brain, the extra glut of receptors that, you know, happens when you stimulate the economy, I mean, when you stimulate the brain in that way, then the dose that will produce cardiac, actually no, it's just respiratory failure, that is to say you stop breathing after you pass out, is pretty close to the LD50. It's pretty close to the dose that will give you an effect. So when you start, the LD50 is, say, 100 times away from what will give you a meaningful effect, and then you go closer and closer, 80, 50, 5, 2, and then you're like straddling a fine line between not being in constant pain, because when you're not having the drug, you're in constant pain because your body has gotten used to the drug, right? You're straddling a fine line between not being in constant pain and just dying because your lungs stopped working, right? So that's very, very dangerous. But of course, this only happens in people who have been exposed to the drug for a very long time. Also makes me think, you know, people who want to go peacefully, people who want to commit, you know, euthanasia, could use this drug very, very effectively to do that. Except, of course, it's a Schedule 2 drug, so you cannot get it. That means, you know, there's valid medical uses for the drug, but it's a very, very serious and, you know, narcotic narcotically dependent drug that will make you very addicted very, very fast. And therefore, it's only very, very highly controlled. And at the same time, that means, you know, it you can only obtain it through a doctor, which I don't know why, but makes me think doctors are probably the primary, the primary people who get this drug out in the market. I mean, the gray and the black market, of course.
So since it's so dangerous, you know, don't we need the state to make sure that, you know, kids don't harm themselves with this and, you know, stumble into it and be conned by dealers and, you know, they get addicted and they'll destroy their lives. Who's going to protect them? Don't we need this? Isn't this a good argument for having the state around?
That's a very good question. My first answer, my first impulse is to answer this question by saying kids who are healthy, who haven't been abused, kids who have plentiful, meaningful, decent lives, kids who are loved, simply won't listen to a scammer or a con artist that is going to sell them drugs to solve their immediate problem, which is psychic pain, right? That's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say, you know, that points to a solution, to a long-term, but a solution, right? And that's the first thing. The second thing is, no, of course we don't need a criminal gang of people who have the right to use violence against others who do not harm anyone else. That's my personal opinion. I could be convinced that I'm wrong, but so far I have not been able to find anyone who has actually pointed to something that would change my mind by way of facts and principles. So maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, I'm always welcoming, you know, people who want to present new ideas. And of course, we'll have the after show and I will have people call in if somebody is interested about this. Would love to have them here, right?
Well, I'm sure people could and have in the past cited statistics about, you know, the deaths, the addictions, how dangerous it is, you know, the losses to the economy. And, it, you know, and I was there at one point before I, you know, realized the doctrines of personal responsibility, of liberty, you know, of the dangers of the state. You know, they talk about the losses, you know, caused by drug addiction, but they never talk about the losses caused by the cops, the war on drugs, the false arrests, you know, the whole legal system, the prison system. They never talk about those costs. You know, so is the cure worse than the disease? But
well, that's the thing, right? If we're talking about cure being worse than the disease, I think we can draw an accurate parallel to, say, chemotherapy being probably better than the disease, which is cancer. But I don't think that organized crime in the form of people in costumes or people in suits or people in dresses, black dresses and wigs, are a cure for anything. They're not, right? So while your analogy stands, I think it's misleading to say that these people are any form of cure. At best, they're a proposed cure that is really a cancer. And at worst, they're just criminals. They're just operating under color of legitimacy, right?
Right, and nobody forces a cancer patient to take chemo. I mean, they take it, you know, by choice under advisement from their doctor. You know, it's a voluntary thing. Whereas, you know, if you want to consume a plant, if you want to smoke a plant, you know, or take it up your nostrils somehow, or inject it, you know, then you're going to have agents of the state come and, you know, basically destroy your life trying to fix it, like this poor girl from this Norwalk or wherever it was in Ohio. Here's another one. A guy was sentenced to 25 years in prison plus 5 years probation for dealing in heroin, a 37-year-old guy. It doesn't say how they caught him. But there, he faced up to 70 years for having 16 individually wrapped and stamped bags. I'm reading from JC Online, and it says Lafayette. And I don't even know where Lafayette is. This may be Indiana, I think, maybe. Anyhow, Jeremy W. Thomas, they found 16 individually wrapped and stamped bags of heroin. Doesn't say how much was in them. You know, does it mean a half gram bag of heroin? I don't know. Plus 1.5 grams of cocaine, numerous prescription medications, and hypodermic needles. So he pleaded guilty to dealing in a narcotic drug, a class, this is poorly written, a class felony, possession of controlled substance, a class C felony, and he gets 25 years. His girlfriend, who's only 20 years old, pled guilty to similar charges and was sentenced in August to 6 years in prison plus 4 on probation. So here she is, probably just in the house. You know, hey, Jeremy, what you doing? I'm working on paying the rent. Better leave me alone, honey. You know?
Yes.
The poor girl now, 6 years in prison for probably just being in the house where he was cutting up heroin to make some bucks.
Hey, he was cutting up flour, right?
Yeah.
Honey, I brought you flowers.
So here's the state.
We should laugh. We should laugh at that. The state just destroyed a potential family right there because they were selling stuff that people wanted, right?
Yeah, collectively 31 years in prison. That's their cure for this disease.
And I love, you know, I have to love how the state uses... No, I'm not going to say the state anymore. I'm going to say a bunch of criminals do this as the state, right? Or as whatever is it that they're doing business like. They just use this propagandistic term. They are facing 25 and 6 years respectively. They're not facing that. It's a bunch of people who have threatened them with death if they don't show up and they resist showing up to a room that has a man dressed in a dress and 12 people who hate the person who's going to sit there and take the punishment, right? So that's what it is, right? This is what you can observe with your eyes. And it's terrible because now we call this, it's just facing X years. It's not facing. Somebody's threatening them with death if they don't submit and go to a cage. Right.
Right. Submit. You know, you're going to get 70 years. So their court appointed attorney says to him, well, yeah, it's not a good situation. We better come to some kind of agreement here or it's going to be even worse. So what do you do faced with that? You convict yourself, basically. You say, yeah, I was doing it. And you hope for the least, you know. So is he to be grateful that they cut it down to a third of what it could have been? It's awful. It's awful. I can only hope that at some point in time we could do away with this whole system and people like these could be pardoned. I don't know. Meanwhile, they're working in the opposite direction.
To be honest, I'm just gonna go for the long con. Con being treating children nicely like human beings instead of treating them like little beasts that need to have a constant threat of punishment so they'll behave. And that's going to be my small contribution to the world, and I hope this continues to increase. I think we're going to take a small break, and since we are in the, you know, in the season to be jolly, I'm going to play a nice song for everyone here. It has nothing to do with drugs, but it's very, very good. Our good co-host Eternal and manager of the show shared a song with me today, and I think it'll help us, you know, bring the spirits up after talking about drugs. Not that we'll stop talking about drugs. After the break, we will come and talk about drugs again. What do you think?
Sounds good to me. Go ahead.
All right. Let's play that song.
The economy is just terrible. And we've already bought all these presents. I'm really worried about our future, honey.
What else can we do? I'm spending as fast as I can to stimulate the economy. Uh-oh. I just maxed out my credit card.
Here, use mine. The economy can use all the spending it can get.
Stop right there. Is your family's holiday spirit and checkbook suffering from the fallacy that consumer spending grows the economy? Well, say goodbye to this popular misconception with Econ Story's new fake holiday album, Deck the Halls with Macro Follies.
Deck the halls with macro follies. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Enjoy the greatest collection of economic holiday hits ever aggregated.
Oh, GDP, oh, GDP, what can we do to grow thee?
Marvel at Macro's mischievous maestro, John Maynard Keynes, who drove spending straight to the top of the pop charts with this hit.
Income equals expenditure. They are one and the same. When the economy contracts, your savings are to blame. So goods collect upon the shelves with workers unemployed. If you want a recovery, buy toys, mountains of toys. If you want a sound recovery, buy toys.
If you like Keynes' general theory, you'll love his inspiration, Thomas Malthus, in this defunct 1820s original.
Silent night, no shoppers in sight. A general glut has caused our plight. Spend your money to clear the shelves. With consumption, we'll save ourselves. Under consumption is born. I view your savings for scorn.
Yes, this amazing collection has Malthusian macro, and thankfully much, much more. Now, curl up by the fire with the classical crooning of Jean-Baptiste Say.
Hark, I hear a fallacy. Demand can't grow the economy. We produce so we can buy. Demand's enabled by supply. If our goal is more consumption, first we must increase production. Rising productivity is the path to prosperity. The law of markets tells us why. Growth is driven by supply.
Increasing productivity needs more savings and investment. The true engine of economic growth. Now hear Friedrich Hayek sing a song of savings.
Your savings are borrowed by businessmen. Production structure is changed. They invest in workers and capital goods.
Our economy rearranged.
Delaying consumption of goods today. A better tomorrow we pave. If growing prosperity is our goal,
the best thing we can do is save.
If we save more today, we can have an even better holiday tomorrow.
And maybe we can even pay for my college tuition.
So relax, enjoy the holidays, and say bah humbug to any pundit or politician pushing consumer spending as a path to prosperity with Econ Stories Deck the Halls with Macro Follies holiday album.
Deck the halls with Macro Follies. La-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
And remember, the only one with the power to create presents out of thin air is Santa himself.
Recession.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody, back to the show. How's everybody doing today?
I'm doing good. That was hilarious.
It was a very good view, right?
Yeah. Well, audio is all I heard.
Well, hopefully at some point we'll have the technical capability to show people video while we do the show. It's, you know, it's being looked at. And hopefully we'll get the right technical people to take a look at what is required so we can actually show a video. Of course, that means y'all gonna have to shave and dress nicely for the show.
Oh my gosh, that's scary.
So, tell me, you had something to say, right, Equash?
Well, you know, I'm just, in light of the, you know, this piece that just played, I wonder how much of Keynesian economics plays into the drug war and the reactions against the drug war. You know, do they think that it's a supply issue? Do they think that it's a production issue or a demand issue? Do they, you know, are the drug control efforts, you know, engaged in a way that supports or reflects their economic policies? I don't know how much of that is true. I know, you know, governments want to crack down, even while they make money off the drug effort. I see an article in Russia Today that talks, this is from November 27th, Russia alarmed over record Afghan heroin bust. So here we have the Russian Federal Drug Service reported that over 175 kilos of heroin have been seized in a year-long police operation in Naberezhdye Chelny. The record haul points to failed drug trafficking efforts by coalition forces in Afghanistan. Of course, we all know that the coalition drug forces in Afghanistan aren't to control drugs other than to control it through their favored suppliers. But anyhow, so they talk about what they've done to seize these drugs. I guess, you know, 175 kilos isn't a huge amount. But what was interesting to me is the end of the article, they say, even without foreign support, Russia is trying to deal with the problem. Federal Anti-Drug Service has opened an office in Kabul with the information from it allowed for several successful operations like this bust. However, as so-and-so pointed out last year, Russia's ultimate objective is to set up a special international agency working in cooperation with the Afghan government and the international organizations like UN, OSCE, and CSTO, whoever they are. The agency will fight the international drug cartels responsible for heroin trafficking and eventually could lead to the creation of a stable system for Eurasian anti-drug security, the Russian official stated. Can you so an uber-national anti-drug agency, you know, to control this horror that's on the world of catering to what people want?
Well, as you can probably imagine, the ratchet ever only goes in one direction until it stops going in that direction and lets loose and kills people in the process. American Revolution, or, you know, Syria, and of course Egypt. We know this from experience. We can't deny this. What I can tell you right away is that the control freaks are getting more and more desperate, because you see the previous attempts at control freakery have failed horribly, and of course it can't just, you know, it can't just be a matter where they'll say, you know, we give up. They won't give up, because control freaks are control freaks, and because via their control freakery they have attained incredible amounts of money, even drug money, just like right there. Because, you know, if you get the if you get money that comes from the drug trade, you have basically an unlimited amount of money to continue punishing people. You don't have to do anything else but do a few drug busts every year to look good and to pretend that you're doing a great job in saving humanity. And you'll get money for you know, you'll pay your salary, and you pay the salary of the other con men that are working with you. The propaganda that was used in the article is amazing. I mean, the implications are all understood. You know, they're going to ratchet up the violence against people who are just selling and producing and buying the stuff that people want to buy. Maybe because they're dysfunctional, maybe because the substance is just so fucking good, right? But what appalls me is that people read this and people just go, yeah, that's cool. We're being protected. These criminals, sorry, these protectors descended from, you know, the high heavens, have decided to protect us from the scourge that is, insert whatever war we are at the moment fighting, right? Well, not we, you know, they are fighting. And so that's pretty terrible, right?
It's awful, and people are again conditioned by the media to, you know, oh, they're saving us from the evil drug dealers. Just in preparing for the show, I looked up some other I don't know if we'll have time to get into cocaine, but I stumbled across a whole load of articles about their efforts to quash the cocaine trade in this country. A submarine with 4,000 kilos of cocaine went to the bottom of the ocean off the coast of Costa Rica. Apparently was scuttled after they'd been tipped off by anti-drug American surveillance planes that spotted the submarine.
All the drug went to waste?
Yeah, unfortunately, he's buried.
Oh, God!
maybe, I don't know, is it water soluble? Can you recover that? Will somebody go looking to save the 4,000 kilos of
I hope they pack the stuff real tight.
Yeah, here's an article in New York. Cocaine pipeline closed for business. Seized more than $1 million worth of cocaine in what law enforcement officials have dubbed Operation Southbound. And they talk about, you know, arresting 39 people. Here's a U.S. missile carrier.
Does it really need a missile to, like, sink a drug?
I don't know.
Submarines.
Well, I think this one was going after surface ships, and they captured 1.5 tons of cocaine and almost 2 tons of marijuana with a street value of over $114 million. And there's pictures and people smiling with children as they all smile as they lift off the illicit cargo. Since January of this year, more than 134 tons of cocaine has been disrupted at an estimated street value of $3 billion. So, a missile ship that's going after, small boats trying to come into this country. Here's
so
one.
They're stopping like 10%, 1%, 5% of the trade.
Yeah, probably. Here's two men charged in Brownsville. I don't even know where this is again. Cameron County. I don't know where this is. The cops made out with $700,000 in cash during an undercover operation where they, I guess there were 50 pounds of cocaine in one vehicle, and then they pressured that guy so that he would tell them where the money truck was, and then they stopped that guy. And $700,000 now is going to go to that county's police force. They'll be able to get some nice stuff. Here's a pastor, Fountain Hill, Arizona, who is admitted to selling drugs because they brought people closer to God. Doesn't say how much time he's facing.
Well, I kind of like the part where, you know, he brought people closer to God by actually using a real life substance instead of the flesh of Christ.
figure. The things people can come up with, to excuse to make things look better. I don't know. But that story involved the sheriff, Apayo, how do you pronounce his name? Sheriff, the famous sheriff, the anti-immigration sheriff, in Maricopa County. What's the guy's name? Joe Arpaio, that's his name. He's responsible for this bust.
We have here in producer chat somebody saying, "This crack becomes the blood and body of Jesus Christ." This is probably true for all the, the crackheads that are using that thing. And we're not talking about a man or a woman or a boy bending down. We're not talking about that type of crack.
Oh,
God. Well, what's the next drug in our schedule?
I don't know. I didn't see the schedule. I've kind of tumbled into cocaine, but it's a pretty big subject. And
Schedule two, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. And it looks like we're down to about our last 3 minutes here, too.
Wow, the show went by pretty, pretty fast. I guess we have more drugs for the next show, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And I wasn't sure there was going to be enough to talk about. I'm not experienced with drugs. I've never touched anything. Of course, I'm one of those with the addictive personality, so I exercise the self-control, and I don't get into that stuff.
It makes sense.
It nearly killed my brother, OD'd on PCP, when he was back in high school. Maybe his bad behavior was a warning to me. So I've stayed away from it. But, I'm not going to stop other people from getting what they think they need. I used to be really afraid of the consequences of drugs. I went from a stage of being like totally, we gotta fight against that. We gotta stop people from doing dangerous things. And as I moved toward libertarianism, I'm like, well, people should be able to, but I still thought the negative consequences were so bad that something should be done to stop people. I looked at like the facts of the opium wars, the two periods, and I think it was 1830s and 1850s, that China went through in trying to stem the flow of opiates into their country, and basically went to war with Great Britain to stop, and it had huge negative consequences for their country. And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, people. Money was flowing out of the country as productivity spiraled because so many were turning to drugs. And I thought, we have to stop people from doing that. But, you know, I've come to realize since then that those people doing drugs do not have a responsibility to me to be productive. No, they don't owe me anything. I can't force them to straighten up their lives and get jobs. They're responsible for themselves and they don't owe me anything. If they want to ruin their lives, well, maybe that externality will have a negative effect on me, but that's life. You know, I can't make them be productive. So I've gone from, you know, wanting to use the state to control people's behavior to letting them go, you know, and I can feel bad for them and their families. I can try to spend efforts to educate them and help them, but I can't force them to change their behavior.
Did I ever tell you that you're a good man?
well, thank you, but, you know, there's some flaws there, so you'll get to know them in time.
Well, I welcome your flaws, but I also welcome your humanity, dude.
Well, thank you.
Well, it's way past sunset, and actually, you know what, Ron? Your outro is pretty cool, but I can't do it myself, so I'm just going to go with people. It's been great having you here. The radio show needs you. Talk to your friends. Talk to the people that you appreciate the most. Tell them what we're doing here. Get them engaged. And get the show on everyone's mind. I hope you have a fantastic time listening to us. I hope you had a fantastic time today. And I will have a fantastic time. You will have a fantastic time. Everyone here will have a great time. This has been The Klein to State, and we're saying goodbye. My man Quash, have a great night.
Good night, Rutto. Thanks a lot. I really enjoyed the conversation.
It was a fantastic conversation.